Okay, our next speaker is Dr. Hanna.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here today. I want to reemphasize what John had said. You can get real excited about mutation breeding, but there's a lot more disappointments than there are successes. And we talk about the successes, but you don't know about all the disappointments. And so good, John, that you talked about some of the failures. But the more experience you have, the better chance you have of having fewer failures, because you know a little bit more what to treat, how to treat, when to treat, populations, things like that. But I want to reemphasize what John said. There's really three secrets to mutation breeding. Now, I'm going to talk very little about mutation breeding. I'm going to talk about sterilizing cultivars. I'm going to use radiation, and there's some mutations in it I'm going to talk about, but mainly I'm going to talk about producing sterile cultivar, commercial cultivars. That's what I'm going to talk about. And somehow it got a little mixed up in the program. There are three secrets. You start with good germplasm, and you have large populations. The question is, how large? As large as you can get it, and you have land for it. And third, you have a good screening technique. That's the key to mutation breeding. Because the larger the population, the more work it takes, and needs a good screening technique. So the better screening technique you have, the better it is. So that's kind of key to it. So today I want to talk a little about production of seed sterile ornamentals, and I'm going to talk about trees also, ornamental fruit, actually some fruit too I'm going to talk about that we're working with. I spent my career about 36 and a half years with ARS at Tifton working with on forages, and we kind of bootlegged a turf work. But then when our turf became popular, and all at once ARS thought turf was good to have part of our name was forage and turf. So we did forage and turf. And so over the years, while I was working with ARS, back in my mind, I'm thinking about, well, this has a kind of ornamental value. That has good ornamental value. But I didn't want to confuse ARS too much and start ornamentals and get it in addition to forage and turf. So we just kind of kept my mind. So I retired on a Friday, and I started on Monday with University of Georgia. So I went to see the dean. I said, "Dean, you know, I got these ideas, a lot of different kind of crops, but I think we can make commercial cultivars out of them and make them sterile." And he said, "Go after it." So that's what I'm going to love to talk about today. Okay, here, let me see, get this thing going. We've been producing seed and pollen sterile cultivars at the UGA Tifton campus for over 60 years. Glenn Burton started it with forages in the 40s and then with turf in the 50s. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how we do it with the forages, with self-incompatibility, and with the turf triploid hybrids. And then I've been there for only 43 years. But it's been fun. Seed and sterile style plants have advantages, especially if economical vegetative propagation is possible. Remember, you sterilize the plant, if you can't propagate it vegetatively, you're in trouble. And, you know, I have a couple of three species right now. I'm a little bit of trouble. But, you know, I've talked to two or three people here just this morning that I think can help me. You have to be able to propagate them if you're going to commercialize them. And then there are various techniques. We have used various techniques over years, but we keep learning. 43 years, you're still learning. And I learned something this morning. You know, I'm always learning. And I try to put it into practice, you know, and find out what other people are doing. Pushed the wrong button here. Let's see. Did I go for it? Okay, advantages of vegetative propagation. Remember I said if you sterilize plants, then you're going to have vegetative propagation. So it allows one to use superior gene combinations regardless of heterozygosity. And, of course, first thing somebody says, well, you're using one genotype out there, genetic vulnerability and all this stuff. Remember, I said superior gene combination. Dr. Burton released Coastal Bermudagrass in 1943. It's still a good one. It's still stable. But it was a superior gene combination. It wasn't one after a whole bunch of cell thing and weak plant vegetation. It was a superior gene combination. Still is superior today. So I don't worry too much about genetic vulnerability. Allows for uniform appearance. In general, people like that. Single superior genotype simplifies management. You don't have genotypic responses to management, fertility, herbicide, various pesticides and things like that. So it simplifies, management. Okay, seed pollen and sterilization techniques. Wide and complex crosses. And I'm going to talk a little bit about all of them, except probably not very much about self-incompatibility. By using wide and complex crosses, you can produce irregular chromosome segregation. At mouse, you've got chromosomes going in all ways. The pollen aborts, the female aborts. It's easy to produce male sterility. It's more difficult to produce female sterility. And so I'm going to say it again after a while, but you say, well, I have a sterile plant. Well, you better make sure you have some good pollinators out there to make sure it's female sterile too, because it's easy to sterilize the pollen, but sometimes difficult to sterilize the female. And so that's usually the challenge. Then gamma radiation, this is where we mess up chromosome translocations, things like that, chromosome rearrangements, mutations, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. That's where the top two is where most of our work is going right now. Then cytoplasmic nuclear male sterility works if no other pollinator are around. And we're doing some of that. I have one example where we're working with that. And then self-compatibility, it works if there's no other pollinator around. A good example of that is Dr. Burton's coastal Bermuda grass. It's pretty seed sterile. But boy, if there's a pollinator on the edge of the field, it can sell a lot of seed. It's sterile as long as you don't have another pollinator. That's where you need to always check, make sure. And all of my replicated tests in all the crops, trees and everything that I have, I always have good check pollinators out there to make sure that there's plenty pollen out there to make sure they're female sterile in addition to male sterile. Wide and our complex crosses give you a few examples. Let me just say here, in cynodon, interspecific triploids, and that's for turf, in Pennisetum, ornamentals, we're using multi-species hybrids and different kinds, and I'll talk a little bit about that. In turf, we cross, it's the same principle as producing a mule. We cross a donkey and a horse and produce a triploid sterile. Cynodon translucens, cynodon dactylon, a tetraploid, a diploid, get a triploid, it's sterile. Female sterile, male sterile. We've been producing these since 1953. Released the last one about 5 years ago. And they're stable, except for one of them, Dr. Burton released in the early 60s, TIF dwarf. It's somewhat unstable, but it's still a very popular cultivar. But it's pretty the same problem. This is TIF sport. Now, this is an example of two different techniques. This is TIF spore on a fairway, and it's a cross transvalensis dactylon. It's a triploid hybrid that we also treated with radiation, gamma radiation, to make it more fine textured. We took a good cultivar, treated with radiation to produce a fine textured one. And the way we did that, we irradiated a genotype, and then we planted in a greenhouse in flats, and we just let the runners run and tiller and a branch out, and then we looked for fine textured shoots, sports, and we took those and propagated those, and that's how we wound up with TIF sport, popular cultivar. This is the last one we released. This is strictly a triploid hybrid. This is TIF grand in a yard in Atlanta, in Roswell, Georgia, north of Atlanta, and it's one that we released that has shade tolerance. Here we released this one back here is Princess Caroline. It's a cross between Pennisetum glaucum, Pennisetum purpureum, squamulatum. It's quite not quite that simple. It's Pennisetum purpureum squamulatum cross that we had. We crossed that with a glaucum that we had a double chromosome number in. It's a diploid. We made a tetraploid out of it, and then we took a progeny from that three-way cross and crossed it back to purpureum, and so we had chromosomes in there. They were going in all directions. You got a lot of sterility, so this one is a complex hybrid. Now we have released and licensed probably about 14 or 15 of these. That's the end of it. Not going to be any more of those. This one here is Princess Molly. That's named after my oldest granddaughter. This is named after my youngest granddaughter. She's a little shorter, and this is a triploid. This is strictly a cross. Glaucum times purpureum, didn't cross double chromosome number, diploid times a tetraploid, it's a triploid. That's Princess Molly, it's a triploid. They're very stable. Sometimes in these we will get a white, a green sector, occasionally, very seldom, but you know, they're very obvious. You can get rid of them, but they're very stable and have been very popular. People have really wanted to license them. Oops. Boy, that thing is sensitive. Okay. This is the gamma source that John used and that I used. It's been there. I've been there 43 years. It's been there. Now, it's been replaced. The source has been replaced one time. But you got a chamber here about the size of a large coffee can. Whatever you put in there has to fit into that chamber right there, and it puts it down there. It's very safe. We follow all kinds of protocol. I used it for 35 years. Now I can't use it anymore. I have to get permission to use it. And I have only one guy, and it has a picture of his iris, and he's the only one that can open the door on it. I have to follow him in. He wasn't even born when I was starting using it, but he's showing me how to use it. But anyway, that's the rules. We follow the rules, whatever it takes. Okay, Miscanthus. Now we get a little ornamental. Now, in Miscanthus, this was the first one I started to try to sterilize. A company came to me and said, listen, in South Georgia, Miscanthus is pretty sterile, but when it gets high elevations, that's a lot of seed. He said, we got to do something about it. So I said, okay, what do you want me to do? I don't know anything about ornamentals. I was greenhorn. This was about 2005 or somewhere in there. I don't remember. Earlier than that, I think. And I said, okay, I can do it. So they brought me some Miscanthus sinensis gracilimus. All right, gracilimus. So we irradiated vegetative material. I'll never do that again. Not unless I have to. Irradiating vegetative material can be a nightmare because there's key to producing mutations or find sterile sectors, which is a kind of a mutation. Is the smaller the growing point, the better your success. When you have a vegetatively growing plant, your growing points are large. If you can get a dormant seed, your growing points are very small. You want them the smaller, the better. Now, if you could get that mutation at the very tip, that's fine. But if you get that mutation on the side of that growing point, you may have to really look hard to find it. And we found a better way to find it, but didn't do that till about 2 years ago. Had to spend a little money, but I found out a better way to find it quickly. It used to take me 2 or 3 years to find it. Now I can find it in 15 seconds. And I'll tell you a little bit about the secret. But here, anyway, here we can see the check. M90 is a check. At Tifton, that's about 51 seed per head. In Blairsville, up in the mountains, so about 2,500 feet, sets 205 seed per head. But look, we have some here, almost none at Tifton. Still very few seed comparatively, 205. We have about three plants here that set very little seed. Now, here's one that's been part of the breeding program. It's not sterile, but it's such a beautiful plant. I put it in every test. It's just a beautiful plant. And it's vigorous. It's cold. I think it would grow in Antarctica almost, or Arctic, maybe in the Arctic. I'm not sure. I think it's cold, doesn't seem to even touch it. But I put it in, but it sets a lot of seed. But we have three of them here that at low elevation, high elevation, both locations produce a low amount of seed. And so that's what we're going after. I'll show you a picture of one of them. Oh, boy, that thing is sensitive. All right, that's M94. That's one of them that sets low seed also in Tifton and up in the mountains in Blairsville. And we have modified gracilimus. We have modified the head morphology some, dwarfed it some. We have changed the morphology of it compared to the Czech. A little, not a whole lot, but we have, and flowering, when it flowers, we have changed some of that. That wasn't so much of my objective. My objective was find a desirable phenotype that is sterile. And, of course, we're always looking for the desirable phenotype. And so that's a key part of it. Allopecuroides, also tremendous amount of seed. I mean, it will just produce a lot of seed. Then you can see the checks here. This P24, 13 seed per head. Now, these are small, you know, Miscanthus has big heads, but these are small heads, this size. And we got 13 seed per head. And Tifton, you got 121 seed per head. So same type of response. High elevation sets a lot more seed. And you can see here at the high elevation, we have types. Now, we selected types in here that almost have no seed, you know, less average, less than one seed. I will never advertise one of these releases. They're going to be released as completely sterile. I'm going to release them as highly sterile because you got too many lawyers out there without a job, and so I don't want to give them more work. But so I'm going to advertise them as highly sterile. And this is almost, you could call them sterile, but no, you can't completely say it, because you can find, occasionally you will find a seed. H18 is a dwarf type, very similar to Hamlin. It's a little more vigorous than Hamlin, but it almost looks completely like Hamlin and sets no seed. Now, Hamlin sets a lot of seed. I don't know if you ever looked at seed set on Hamlin, but it sets a lot of seed. These others are taller types. Some are similar to Hamlin, but they're taller types. Genotypes that I've collected over the years. I was a Pennisetum curator for the U.S. For about 30, 35 years. This is one of them. This is Alopecularis 13. This is one of the taller ones, and it's one of the ones that's sterile. It's funny, though. This is up in the mountains, and this year, these plants, I saw them about a week ago, and they still haven't started hitting. This winter really changed things around. But the leaves, I mean, they're just beautiful, just canopy of leaves, but still no heads this year. This is one that, this is a little different way of getting sterility. This is one that John Reuter and I released in 2005. This is a Pennisetum purpureum. This is Princess. It's a dwarf. It's the common name is elephant grass. Elephant grass is basically vegetatively propagated in the tropics and subtropics, mainly not so much subtropics, mainly in the tropics. It's a vegetatively propagated species for 4-H and even these types. And so, consequently, there's never any release of recombination and of seed production. And so, over years, they accumulate a lot of aberrations, and they're highly sterile. You can take seed from this thing, a little. You don't get much. You get a little, but it will produce everything except this right here. And even in, when we did 4-H breeding, with forage breeding, we had Murkron, beautiful, vigorous plant. You take seed from it, you would never find Murkron in it. Most of it is junk that you took seed from it, because they're highly heterozygous, and it's just accumulated a lot of mutations, aberrations over the years that have never been selected against in the environment. So when we released this one, this popular one, this was one of the first ones. The problem with this one is it does get a little leaf disease at the bottom. If you grow this thing from Dallas North, it doesn't get any disease. It's beautiful. Dallas Botanical Gardens has it in their entrance. As you go into Dallas Botanical Gardens, it's in their center of the drive. They've been there for a number of years. It looks really nice. Have you seen it, John, there?
Not
a Dallas. Yeah, they had it the last time I was there, a couple of 3 years ago. And it's just aberrations continue to accumulate. Okay, when I retired in 2003, I was out one Saturday morning picking up pine cones in the yard. I had about 300 pine trees in my yard. And I went back in the house. I said, Barbara, I'm not going to be picking up pine cones every Saturday morning for the rest of my life. So Monday, I went to the office, and I started working on a sterile pine tree. So we're trying to sterilize loblolly and slash pine. We have a few thousand trees out. The first 250 are about 8 or 9 years old now. We've had a few trees in there that have been... It's easy to find male sterility. We got male sterility. There's a few trees that have put the little cones on but still haven't matured any cones. And in the way of a pine, if it doesn't get fertilized, that little tiny cone about the size of your thumbnail, if it doesn't get fertilized, it drops off. That's where we want it to drop off. We don't want it to get this large. And so here's a case where tremendous pollen production. Remember, I always say in our nursery, we have a lot of pollen producers. I want to make sure that there's plenty of pollen flying around. And then this is one that's pretty sterile. And here you see the cones. Here's one that we have without cones. You see this branch right here? If you look at the back, there's another one branching. Pretty typical when you irradiate, you're messing up the growing point. And so the growth primordia, you get some of this branching like this here. But this is one that has been sterile for a while. This is one, and I don't know whether this is a check, but there's one in there. one of the many that do produce cones. We're doing this with both loblolly and with the slash, and we've seen some trees now that have been sterile for 3 years. But with trees, my experience with trees are, be careful. Don't jump to any conclusions with trees. Take your time. Look for a long time to make sure, because you can make a jump to a conclusion too fast with a tree. We're also looking at pomegranate, sterilizing pomegranate. We have about 1,000 trees out. And so I said, well, you can sterilize a pomegranate and give me fruit there. Well, they don't understand. I'm not getting rid of the aerial. I'm just getting rid of the little black, gritty seed that's inside the aerial. That's what we have some pretty good propagated, some potential. There are sectors. That's another thing. When you're dealing with radiation, you're going to wind up with sectors. And so you have to select the sector out that you want. For us, it's seed set. For somebody else, it might be a morphological characteristic. But what we did was, when these trees start flowering, we just go out and start cutting fruit and chew in on the aerial and see if there's seed there, and we mark it, and then we propagate. Now, one thing about pomegranate, easy to propagate, very easy to propagate. So if we find it, we have probably, I don't know, 30 or 40 selections out of the 1,000 trees that we've made that they're starting to produce fruit this year, and so we'll know a little bit more by the end of this year. I've been growing citrus in my yard for about 40 years. This one right here produces about 45 seed per fruit. This tangerine, it's great fruit. If I ask somebody, you want some fruit? Does it have seed? Yeah, I don't want it. I don't want it. Nobody wants a fruit with seed. I don't mind spitting seed, but people don't like fruit with seed. So I said, okay. I asked the dean again in 2005. I said, can I see if this is, you know, I'm not really a citrus guy. And listen, I am not a citrus breeder. I want you to make that clear from the beginning. But I know a little bit about citrus. I've been growing it for many years. And in 87-88 winter, this thing survived 0 degrees at Tifton. I had about 12 inches of kale at the end of the limbs, but it didn't kill the trees. So it's pretty good. Changsha tangerine. So we treated about 200 trees. We seed from 200 trees, and it's apomictic, as you were talking this morning. So we just start, again, when it starts producing fruit, we just go in around the tree, and we start cutting fruit, looking for ones that didn't have seed. We found a number of sectors, and we're propagating them, and they're in starting to produce now. The grafts and buds are starting to produce. Make sure that we have them clean. So we have wound up with this one here. Now, you will find two or three seed in it occasionally. Well, you will find two or three seed in this fruit. But we've gone from 45 to two or three using gamma radiation. It's a sad thing. Right after I went to Texas to close out an estate. My mother had passed away, and I took some of my citrus work with me. And on the way back, our truck was broken into and stole everything, including my citrus data. And stole the computer and my records and everything. Stole everything, and so I had to kind of recreate some of them. But anyway, we still have the plants. We also did the same thing with Aishang lemon. Now, this one, 87-88, had about 18 inches a kill with 0 degrees at Tifton, but didn't kill the trees. And I've been growing this thing in my yard for, like I said, probably 40 years. This one, I had some large seed and about 70 seed per fruit. It's still juicy. Now we have it down to two or three seed per fruit, and still juicy. Now, the fruit are smaller in diameter than they are here. They did, because you don't get 70 big seed. The seed are about that size. I mean, they're almost the size of your thumbnail. Large seed, you know. When you take them out, you get a little smaller fruit, but you still got the juice, real juice. We have data. The grafted trees are starting to produce now. And I'm not going to show it. We also have a grapefruit. I didn't produce it. I found it. It's a nice grapefruit. That's about a 35-year-old tree just south of Tifton. In fact, with John Reuter's former technician, has it in his yard. We call it Bruce, but probably that's not the way it's going to be released, but because it's Bruce that has it, you know. But it's a tremendous grapefruit. I mean, it's a tremendous grapefruit. It's seedless. I would say you will very seldom find a seed in it. It's a big tree, just tremendous. We can grow fruit in South Georgia, citrus, and pretty reliably for backyard. I don't know whether you want to commercialize it, but for backyard, it works great. Okay, radiation to produce seed sterility. Doses vary from 5 to 30,000 reds. Five of all the stuff I've worked with, pine trees are a cream puff. Five thousand reds or 5 kr, you really put a killing on them. But I try to move it up by treating the seed, pre-treating the seed and everything. I was able to get the treatment up to about 5, and that's what we have out in the field now is 5 kr. Then there's other plants you can give it 30, and like John said, it don't seem like it can bother it. I'm working on a plant right now I can't talk about. I gave it 20 just as a preliminary to see what we're going to do. Actually, the 20s look better than the check. There's some reasoning behind it. Really can't talk about it right now. But you need to give enough radiation to accomplish sterility without reducing vigor too much. You can reduce vigor of the plant. You don't want to reduce the vigor. Unless maybe you want to slow down the growth or something, but most of the time we want to keep the vigor, and so we need to find a right dose to use. Radiation can affect the vegetative propagation of some species. I'm working a number of other species I didn't talk about. One of them is ruby grass. Anybody know ruby grass, Melinus? It's a beautiful, tufted little grass. It is a beautiful thing, but it produces these nice little red, pinkish heads, and about a month after they flower, there's a million of little rubies all around. You know, it just reseeds like crazy. We're able to sterilize it, but the key is when we sterilize it, we also reduce propagation vigor. And so we're working on tissue culture right now. We're working with a company to put it into tissue culture because it will produce. Also, Elapecuase, I think I told you, produces a lot of seed too. We sterilize it. So, anyway, you need to use enough radiation, but you can't ruin the vigor. And a little bit, to get sterilized ruby, we had to kind of mess up the vigor a little bit for vegetative propagation. Easier to produce male sterility than female sterility. I said that once. Always need to have a good pollinator as checks in any test that you do. Because you can say, okay, it's not setting any seed. It may be setting any seed because it's male sterile and there's not a pollinator around. You need to make sure you have a good pollinator around. Okay, cytoplasm male sterility getting toward the end. Pollen sterile, seed set with the right pollinator, plants remain vegetative longer. Because especially, you probably don't want to use this in a perennial, but in annuals, like one I'm going to show you in a minute as an ornamental, it's a benefit because in an annual, once it sets seed, it says it's time to mature and the plant dies. If you can keep it from setting seed, you can keep it vegetative longer. And so that's the idea for using cytoplasmic male sterility. And it's easy to maintain. You have your commercial cultivars, an A line or male sterile, and your maintainer line that you maintain a genotype is a B line, a fertile line. The only difference is both have the same genotype. Only once the B line, the pollen shedder, has a sterile cytoplasm. And so anytime you use that pollen to put on the sterile, female contributes the sterile cytoplasm, so you always wind up with a sterile commercial hybrid. And you maintain it with that fertile line that you keep at home, and you sell the one that's the commercial one that's sterile. And so, and it works best with annuals. This example, this is a mutation in millet. We had a large, when I came to Tifton in 71, had a large radiation mutation breeding program. In fact, it wasn't for this, but it was for the International Atomic Energy. In the 60s, the Russians said that you could improve corn yield with low doses of radiation. And the United States guys were, listen, we can't let the Russians increase yield with a low dose of radiation. We need to know whether that works for the United States. So they wanted us to do it with corn, and we said, no, we got millet, which is easy to manipulate. Faster cycles, bigger populations, and let's do it with millet. So we did it. We had a 25-year project with the International Atomic Energy Agency. And yes, wheat produces a lot of mutations, but it didn't increase yield. And so that's for sure. So we produced a lot of cultivars out of that whole program, but it didn't increase yield. So that was an unnecessary scare. But this one here is a mutation. It's a dominant mutation. And this one is just about, it's male sterile now, so with a cytoplasmic male sterility that we have, and it's about ready to release. Now, this one here is one I really like, but it's been a little bit, I've been a little hard to corral all of those genes, the reds and the yellows and everything in there to get them corralled. I have them together, and I can always recover them, but it's been a little hard to corral them to keep them all together. And because there's more operating with this mutation than just this color, there's a translocation that has this gene located right next to the broken chromosome. And so it's hard to get the recombination that we need. And so it's causing us a little problem with stabilizing this. We got this stabilized, but we don't have this one stabilized here. But this one, I think we're pretty close to ready to release. Okay, summary. It's a numbers game. You have a good screening technique. And you need to deal with sectors when you use radiation. You got to use sectors. Now, we used to, when we started out, we'd plant this radiate material out, and then we'd collect all the heads from the plant, and then we'd take them to the lab, and then in the fall, when we had time, we would hand thrash them and go through that, and it took us a year to go through all this stuff. And then at the end, we had some lines, had just a few seeds. And back in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, is that one suit? Is that could be a contamination from the last plant, or is it really just one or two seed? Or it could have had no seed. And I say, okay, that's good, but what's the possibility? It's what maybe it had some seed, but in the cleaning process, because there's a lot of cleaning, blowing, rubbing, that they lost that seed. So I was back in my mind, I'm always thinking, I'm not real sure. So we solved that problem 2 years ago. We got ourselves bought a radiation X-ray machine. So I go to the field and I go around the plant. I got A, B, C, D. That's the way I do it. And I collect heads from A, B, C, D. And we go, that takes 15 seconds to take that picture. And I can tell you, okay, C has sterility, B doesn't. So we propagate from C where they're sterile. See, this plant doesn't have any seed. This has some scattered seed right here and there. This one almost completely fertile. There's a few sterile seed, but too many seed. We want to mess with something like this that's completely sterile. So the X-ray machine costs a little money, but boy, it has saved years of work and peace of mind back in my mind that when I say it's sterile, it's sterile. Because especially when you're working with low seeds that are almost sterile. Back of your mind, you're always wondering, did they lose a seed, or was it maybe a contaminant of a seed? And so with this, in 15 seconds, when I collect that head, I know it's sterile or it isn't sterile. And that's the key to it. Any questions?
Just repeat them back to me.
Oh, yeah. Are there any questions?
Yeah.
Yes?
So with your pomegranate study, did you choose one cultivar that
you Yeah,
did?
Wonderful.
We used Wonderful, okay.
Oh, yeah. I have Wonderful in my yard for 25 years, so I use Wonderful. Okay.
Hold on, there's one more question.
Oh, okay.
Do you still have the seed coat inside the root?
I'm sorry?
For the tier C, like the tier C, do you have the seed coat inside the root?
Oh, you mean for the pomegranate?
Yeah.
There's some of them where it does. You'll have a kind of a residual soft tissue there, and there's others that don't. So, as I say, shrubs and trees, I'm a little careful before I jump to conclusions. I want to see it repeated. But yeah, there are some. I have one that's just a beautiful, big fruit, red. Now sometimes you get those fruit. And when you taste them, it'll turn your face about three colors. They're so sour. But I have one that's a beautiful big fruit, but it has that little of that seed coat, a little soft tissue there in the center of the aerial. But we have some that don't have that. So we just have to kind of have to sort through that. But that's a good question. Okay, thank you.